Hi, this is Wayne Zell, and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a podcast that's dedicated to helping our listeners realize their personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the full-service law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about OF&P, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com. And I invite you, the listener, to join me on my blog and experience all of the video, audio, and written content that you possibly can absorb in the areas of tax, estate planning, and business planning. We try to educate and bring all of this value to you for no cost, just the time that you have to spend listening to it. And if you'd like to subscribe to the blog, there's a place to do that. Whenever we post something, you'll get an email telling you that something has been posted. And all of these podcasts are there. And today with me is my special guest who is on one of these podcasts, Mr. Chris Helmrath, who is Managing Director of SCNH Capital Group, an arm of SCNH, which is an accounting firm based out of Baltimore, but located all around the country, right?
Yes, sir. We've got offices all around the country.
Welcome, Chris. If you want to know more about Chris and the SCNH practice, there's another podcast that you can listen to. But today, Chris is going to tell us all about the healthcare industry. He's had firsthand experience learning about the healthcare industry being a patient. He has represented hospitals. He has represented hospital groups. He has represented companies that acquire hospitals. And I think more than anyone that I've ever met, you have a real true understanding of what's going on in the healthcare industry. If you had to start describing what is happening in the healthcare industry today, how would you describe it to the layperson?
I think where we are in healthcare today is the industry, the regulators, the politicians are trying to figure out the follow the money and how and where the money is going.
Okay.
We have and we hear about the number of uninsured. We hear about insurance companies making exorbitant profits. We hear about physicians who are just so many people believe extraordinarily wealthy.
Yeah.
And I think what has happened is we've had a confluence of all of this coming together. And what we're seeing through some of the regulations that are being placed in the market today, the Affordable Care Act,
right,
and through some of the state issues, we're starting to see now some shaping of where this industry could be going. And it all gets to, we have limited dollars, we have an inefficient delivery system,
right,
but even more so, we have an inefficient population base that doesn't understand healthcare and how to utilize healthcare to make themselves as healthy as possible. And so what you have is you have this confluence of all of this coming together and trying to squeeze everything into where it should be. And that's the fun part of what's going on today, mm-hmm, because we're all learning together. I don't think there's anybody that can tell you where healthcare will be in 10 years.
Right.
But there are very few people that really understand the machinations that are going on right now to try to figure out where we can become more efficient, because we've tried to do it at such a global level without digging in deep.
Trying to provide the quality of care.
That is absolutely correct.
That some people are able to take advantage of. Not everybody.
And again, that is part of the problem. And so what we're finding is that with limited dollars and with the confluence of the care provider networks,
right,
how do you bring more people into the system? How do you create a higher quality of care? And how do you have it cost less money?
Is that possible? Is that even possible?
I don't know.
I
don't know that it's a pipe dream or possible, but what we're seeing now are efficiency mechanisms being put in place that are actually working.
Like what? Give us some examples of the efficiency mechanisms that are being put in place today.
If you look at what are going on today, we're going back to that old concept of capitation, which we heard about years and years ago.
What does that mean for the listener?
For the listener, it means there will be a set pool of money that will be able to be spent for a pool of patients,
right,
for all of their healthcare needs.
Right, right. And like an HMO, right?
The concept of capitation.
Right.
And how do you effectively allow that patient to achieve the quality of care that they need to achieve, and at the same time have it cost as little as possible.
Right.
So let's use an example. We've all seen it.
Yes.
Johnny is playing, you're at Little League, and it's Thursday night and everybody's having a great time. Johnny slides into second base and he breaks his arm.
Right.
Heretofore, the first thing that would happen is you would go to the emergency room.
Right.
The highest cost in the delivery mechanism of healthcare
is the emergency
room. Is the emergency room, because it's the big hospital. Everybody comes there and it's an ingestion point. You can only be seen so quick by so many providers to get you where you need to go.
Okay.
Where we're trying to get in healthcare today, that emergency room has its purpose and its place.
Right.
And that is for acute care, tertiary care, and quaternary care. Or in other words, those things that really need an emergency.
Okay.
And what we're seeing now is the advent of urgent care centers.
Right, right.
Whether it be at a drugstore, we see some of the national drugstore chains that are
Walgreens,
going to that,
yeah.
Correct? Mm-hmm. But we're also seeing the chains either being owned by physicians or being owned by collaboratives that are setting up institutions where you can go, be seen, be evaluated, receive x-rays, blood work, get your pharmaceuticals, and get out, but in a building that might be 5,000 or 6,000 square feet,
right,
or less,
right,
not the large hospital.
With all the overhead and
with
cost.
All the overhead. So what we get is we get all, Johnny can have his arm fixed in an urgent care center.
Okay.
If Johnny needs to go to the next level, then somebody has evaluated that and you can go to that next level. But if we could get the ingestion points better sorted and bring the cost down, mom and dad get a better care because Johnny is seen and out within a reasonable period of time, not the stories you hear of, oh, I waited 6 or 8 hours in the emergency room because of the triage.
Sure.
And we have the same issues as well going to your primary care physicians.
Yeah.
Can you get to that physician where you call and they're like, yes, we can see you in 3 weeks,
right,
but I have my cold today.
Right.
And so as we're learning, we're finding more efficient
mechanisms
to be
service,
able to deliver quality care,
right,
at the right time, at the right place.
For the right diagnosis
thing.
Or whatever.
Absolutely correct.
Now, that's where you get into some really interesting questions. And we're not going to answer all these questions today, but you know, you go, you think you have a cold, you have a cough, you go to one of these urgent care or off-site delivery centers,
right?
Not on the hospital.
Correct.
Not in the emergency room. And you have a nurse practitioner see you, and the nurse practitioner, you know, says, well, you know, you have a cough, here's some medicine. They're obviously going to screen you for allergies and do all the right things that they're supposed to do. But what if it's cancer? What if it's something else that you don't know about? How are you going to discover these things and these sort of lower tier facilities, and how will you deliver that high quality of care that we've come to expect?
Well, let's back up.
Yeah.
Some of these, as you call them, lower facilities,
step down facilities or whatever,
are staffed by fully trained physicians that have said, I don't want to be in that hospital setting.
Right.
Many of these here in our market are staffed by emergency room trained physicians to be able to evaluate you. And if they do and they see your condition, and if it's blood work, et cetera, and they can identify something, then they can get you to the appropriate level of care.
To the right specialist.
But let's
go back. Refer you to that.
Correct,
that
but let's go back. If we have more people entering the system and we're not putting out any more physicians than we have before, and you highlighted nurse practitioners, physician assistants, what
right.
we're finding is that we are training a different level of care provider that has a defined skill set that can handle a vast majority of what needs to be handled, but at a lower cost. They didn't go
sure.
to medical school, but they've been trained to be able to handle that core of what can be handled.
And the demand for those people is enormous.
As we have more and more people
right.
being insured,
right.
that's going to happen.
So is that, would you say that that's a benefit of the Affordable Care Act or of Obamacare?
I would tell you that the thinking is stimulating that.
Okay.
I'm not going to go political on you,
yeah.
but
you
I think the concept is there, which should have been there all along,
mm-hmm.
which is how do we provide the best level of care? So let me give you an example. There have been some studies done recently with health plans of self-insured employees.
Okay.
Large corporations are, for the most part, who self-insured.
Pay for the coverage for their employees up to a certain level and certain.
Yeah. So if you're a small firm and you go to a large insurance company and they provide your plan, as your company gets larger, all you're using is a third-party administrator to administer, but you are taking all of the risk. You're not paying somebody a premium. It's coming from the earnings that you have in the company to provide that care.
So who's willing to bear the risk like that? There's self-insurance, and then on the other end of the spectrum is paying for insurance through an insurance company.
That's correct.
The insurance company is accepting the risk in that instance.
Correct. Right? So it's who's going to take that risk.
Okay.
But the study that I've most recently seen, and it's pretty telling, that 50% of the self-employed's cost is coming from 10% of their employees. And what is being found there is the employee is being put in a situation where they have a health issue and they don't know how to utilize the healthcare system. So they're seen by one physician and they might get a prescription. They might be being seen by another physician and getting something different, and there is no coordination of their care. But because there's no coordination, the costs go up. Mm-hmm. Nobody is watching it. Nobody is saying, whoa, 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 if we brought you to a point of contact and that point of contact managed your situation, could we not reduce the cost, increase the quality, and your life is better?
That's the Kaiser Permanente model.
But now we're bringing it to the larger world. So what you're seeing is who are going to be the risk bearers? Who's going to take the risk of the dollar? So the federal government is the largest insurer of healthcare.
Right.
Whether it be through the VA system, whether it be through Medicare.
Right.
But they are only providing dollars.
Right.
And those dollars, as we all know, are limited because we've run out. We're running out of money.
We can't print any more money. That's right.
So if that money is going into the pool, how then does the risk taker then take that and say, I will manage those lives? And so what you're seeing is it's no longer just the insurance companies that are taking the risk, but you're now seeing physician practices, hospitals, collaboratives that are saying, I will take the risk and I will have these number of lives and I will have to then be the one that figures out that the money doesn't run out.
Right.
Because the government isn't capable of doing that.
Right.
And that is what you're seeing in this shift. And so now we're allowing private business to get more involved in that. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, I can't afford to lose money.
Right.
But I have to keep my quality of care high because the government is requiring it because it's coming from them on the regulations that they've stipulated. And so there is the mix that's going on now between how do you keep the doctors happy, how do you educate the patients, and how do you deliver the quality of care in the fixed world that we have?
Yes.
And getting the cost down as low as possible.
I mean, you have a brother who's a doctor. I have a brother who's a doctor, and we're really proud of them. They went through rigorous training.
Yes.
They're some of the smartest people in any profession. And the thing that I've heard, at least from my brother, and many of my clients are physicians, is the Affordable Care Act and what the insurance companies are doing as a result of it, and many of the companies that self-insure, has squeezed the physicians to the point where they're suffering, they're not able to continue in practice, they're complaining that the cost of them remaining in business is not worth it. And the biggest concern I've heard expressed is, well, we're being required to maintain our own insurance to protect us against lawsuits, malpractice insurance.
Correct.
And, how do we balance the fact that we're getting paid less from the insurance companies, less from the employers, and yet our cost of practicing is going up?
Many people
are getting out of the practice of medicine or trying to go to work as employees for bigger entities.
And we're now seeing that. So what you're seeing is the physicians are trying to be employed by the hospitals.
Right.
But the hospitals have the same issue. They're not getting as much money. Their costs are going up. And so what we have is we're in a turbulent time where that's why I don't think anybody can tell you where it's
going.
What's
going to happen,
But we have a couple of things. And structurally, if I can, I'll give you two thoughts.
Yes.
One, if we were not to limit insurance or the risk takers by state boundaries and would allow larger pools of risk patients to be evaluated and the cost spread. If we go back to my analogy,
that's the basic premise of insurance, is having a larger pool across which you can spread the mortality or the health
absolutely
risks.
So what ACA is trying is to get the 23-year-olds to sign up,
yes,
because they're not going to need the health care,
right?
But it's to cover the 60-year-old that gets ill,
right?
The same concept. If I can spread the pool larger, it gets me my 50% from the 10, my 50-10 rule.
Right.
If I can make that in a larger pool, I can actually increase the dollars available to make it a better system.
Okay, so one is to try to spread it across a larger pool.
I think my question, how do we break down the state lines?
Yes.
From the insurance, that's a state-regulated issue.
Very tough.
Nobody says it's easy. Right. And the other is tort reform.
Tort reform meaning that my malpractice brethren who sue doctors for committing an act of a wrongful act against a patient.
Correct.
Would the whole legal system would need to change there. What would be done to make it more beneficial for the doctors, less beneficial for the lawyers, and more beneficial for the patients?
Well, if we look at some of the other countries around the world, if we're using them as benchmarks, there are countries that instead of going to juries to make these decisions, it is panels of other physicians that are evaluating and saying,
interesting,
is this an emotional decision or is it not an emotional decision? Because in the case of some very sophisticated medicine being practiced, and we hear of it all the time,
right,
and thank God we have physicians that can do this. If say something happened wrong in an operating room on a very difficult and very intricate surgical procedure,
right,
and these are physicians that have spent 20 years of their lives being trained,
right,
but we're asking 12 people that may or may not have any education in that field to ascertain, did the doctor do what the doctor should have done,
right,
and how much emotion plays in to the person who may have been harmed.
So it's not a really it may be a jury of your peers, but it's not a jury of someone who really understands what's happening. And this is complex stuff.
It's very complex stuff. And so at some point,
we're going to need to change the system.
I think we need to change the system because it's, where is that line? And I'm not saying that those people that do things that they shouldn't do shouldn't be punished.
Yes.
I'm all for that.
Yes.
But it's that gray area of what was appropriate, what was the protocol of care. Mm-hmm. Because what we now have, when you go and you go to the physician and they run 20 tests, could they have come up with the same answer in four?
Right.
But the other 16 were to protect them from a jury saying, well, why didn't you run that?
You know, it's funny. I had prostate cancer at the age of 43. And the only way it was found was because my internist conducted a test that he wasn't supposed to conduct. And yet he did it because he had a suspicion that based on my symptoms and what I was experiencing, he knew there was only a 1% chance, but he was willing to take that risk. I'm very grateful to him that he did that because I'm alive today because of that. But it's hard. You're dealing with a system that's limiting the resources and have limited dollars to spread.
Correct.
At the same time, you're hoping that you'll have that internist who finds the problem that you're suffering from.
Or the specialist.
The specialist.
Or the specialist. What we're seeing now is that even in, say, cancer, mm-hmm, where it used to be, I will give you chemotherapy.
Right.
It's now, let's look at your genetics and let's understand how your body responds, because your body's going to respond different than how my body responds.
Right.
Where heretofore we may have said the same chemotherapy would have been prescribed for both of us.
Fascinating.
They're now to the point of genetics and the testing that they can do that oncology can say what Wayne gets
might be
different than what I might get,
right,
even though we may present with the exact same case.
Right.
And we're learning through science to be able to do that.
So it requires dollars and it requires investment to do that.
And so where is that line?
That's right.
And so that's the hard part today, is how do we continue to keep quality? And quality isn't just what we're doing today, but what we can be learning to do tomorrow.
And therefore increase the efficiencies.
Correct. And so it's a tough situation. But it's not as easy as to yell at the TV. It's not just the insurance company.
And
it's not just the doctors.
And it's not just the lawyers either.
It's how do we reframe this entire? And there aren't enough people that are focused in the trenches. It's the people that are standing and saying, I want to get reelected. And so this is what's going to happen.
Well, if you run.
I'm not running.
For congressional, I will vote for you on that premise. Now, we're talking with Chris Helmrath, a managing director at SC&H Capital. And Chris has been giving us a really good insight into his understanding of the healthcare system and how it's evolving. And I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Chris, thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Thank you very much for having me.
And if you'd like to know more about Chris and get in touch with him and discuss healthcare reform, and also maybe you're in the healthcare business and need to retain his expertise, dial up www.scandh.com. And you'll be able to find him on the SC&H website. Thanks again, and we'll be talking with you soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth. Have a great week.